Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I am Al Gore. I used to be the next president of the United States of America. I don't find that particularly funny.
Only slightly less exclusive than the Club of Presidents is the Club of Almost Presidents, those men and some might say one woman who lost an election, but still somebody voted for them, and sometimes most people did, and some really had an impact despite their losses. Joining me now is Scott Faris, author of Almost President, The Men Who Lost the Race But Changed the Nation. Welcome to WNYC and happy President's Day, Scott.
Well, good morning, Brian, and happy Almost President's Day, too.
Ha. So today let's start by remembering George McGovern. Here he is on election night in 1972 when he lost in a landslide, making his concession speech to Richard Nixon. Oh, we don't. Okay, we don't quite have that yet. So, of the few landslides that there have been in presidential elections, the Nixon victory over George McGovern is, at least to the people alive today, one of the biggest. But you write that it opened the door to President Obama's 2008 victory. How did it do that?
That's right, Brian. I mean, first of all, of course, the late Senator McGovern just died a few months ago. Yet many people didn't believe anything good would have come out of that 1972 loss to Richard Nixon. McGovern lost overwhelmingly, only carried one state. And yet in that election, Senator McGovern created a new coalition among the Democrats. He saw that the old New Deal coalition was disappearing. Organized labor was in decline. The sort of urban ethnic groups that had supported the Democratic Party, their kids were moving to the suburbs and becoming Republicans. And, of course, most significantly, the Southern Democrats were, well, at least the white Southern Democrats, were becoming Republicans. And so George McGovern aggressively reached out to minority voters. He especially targeted women voters, especially working women, and then also went out for the young. And if you look at the coalition that eventually developed, that elected Barack Obama first in 2008 and reelected him last year, it was made up of minorities. It was made up of women, especially working women, strong appeal to the young. So really, the Obama presidency has in some ways been the revenge of George McGovern.
And if you take a step back further in time, McGovern, who lost, was inspired by Adlai Stevenson, who lost twice to Eisenhower as the Democratic nominee in 1952 and 1956. So what about Adlai Stevenson's impact, and why would George McGovern have cited him upon losing again?
Adlai Stevenson created sort of a new model for liberal leadership coming after the post-war period. He inspired an awful lot of young people, including people like George McGovern, to enter into politics. Stevenson was known for his urbanity and his erudition. He was a very eloquent speaker, seemed to speak at a different level than most politicians did, and so really inspired a whole generation of new Democratic activists. Arthur Schlesinger Jr. said, who worked for John Kennedy, said John Kennedy's presidency would not have been possible without Adlai Stevenson, because he paved the way for this intellectual approach to politics that Kennedy then used also as well in his presidency. So Stevenson's still beloved. I talked in the book about one time Gary Trudeau did a little panel in his Doonesbury cartoon where the character, I think it was Rick Redfern, I can't remember exactly, but he says he was very depressed about politics, and he said, if anything happens to me, you must tell my child about Adlai Stevenson. So he knows there are some good things in politics.
Listeners, any Almost Presidents you want to remember or ask a question about today, 212-433-WNYC for Scott Faris, author of the book, Almost President, The Men Who Lost the Race But Changed the Nation, 212-433-9692. Maybe some of you still have buttons or posters from failed campaigns you worked on or grieved over, or you can go further back in history, too, to before your own lifetime. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And, of course, one of the Almost Presidents you write about is Barry Goldwater, who didn't really come any closer than George McGovern did in the landslide of 1964 when Lyndon Johnson was elected. But you write that the Goldwater candidacy made the Republican Party into what it fundamentally became afterwards. And, of course, Nixon won the next election just 4 years later.
That's true. It sort of masked how significant Goldwater's campaign was. Again, like McGovern's, looked like it was a disaster for the Republicans. But of course, it was the beginning of the ascendancy of the conservative wing of the Republican Party that culminated in Reagan's victory. The Republicans taken back the House in 94, and the very, very conservative stance of the Republican Party today. Prior to Goldwater, both parties tended to be big tent parties. There were liberal wings and conservative wings in both the Democratic and the Republican parties. But Goldwater began sort of the realignment of the two parties, and so the Republican Party has become not merely just sort of a fundamentally conservative party, but almost an exclusively conservative party, whereas the Democratic Party then has collected all the moderates and liberals out of the Republican Party and become a fundamentally liberal party, which is very different. And most significantly achieving that was Goldwater's decision to oppose the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The Republicans had previously to that been known as the Party of Lincoln. They sort of still are, of course, but Goldwater decided that constitutionally there was no role for the federal government in enforcing racial equality. It wasn't that he was personally a bigot. He just felt there were certain limits to federal power in terms of doing that, that the real equality would come in changing hearts and minds, not laws. That was very appealing in the South at that point in time, which, of course, was heavily resisting integration. And so the South, which had been just completely, almost exclusively Democratic for generations, suddenly white Southerners said, you know, I'm not a Southern Democratic populist, I'm a Southern conservative Republican. And now the South, which had been solidly Democrat for so many generations, is now pretty solidly Republican, with a few exceptions here and there.
Let's take some phone calls. Our lines are jammed with people wanting to remember past almost presidents. And Augustine in North Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Who are you thinking about?
Eugene Debs. He was probably famous for his numerous movements to help the workers, the Pullman workers. And, you know, my question was how, despite, you know, I think he was in jail and he still ran, how influential was he as a politician?
Eugene Debs, progressive leader, socialist in the terms of that time, a century ago. And I don't know if he falls in the scope of your book because he didn't get a major party nomination. But do you mention Eugene V. Debs?
I do mention Eugene V. Debs, but I do just mention him. As you mentioned, the title of the book is Almost President, so I tended to focus on those major party candidates who lost because they would have actually had a chance to be almost president. But I do have a chapter on third parties that I talk first and most about Ross Perot, because he was the one third party candidate that actually seemed to have a chance to be almost president, because he got nearly 20% of the popular vote in 1992 and would have done better if he hadn't been quite so flaky during his campaign, dropping out, then coming back in, claiming the Republicans were going to sabotage his daughter's wedding. But Eugene Debs, very interesting man, ran several times on the Socialist Party. He was not in jail when he ran in 1912, which was his best year. He collected a million votes. And in those days, given the American population, that was a significant percentage of the vote. That was in that crazy election where you also had Theodore Roosevelt running as a third-party candidate. Ultimately, Woodrow Wilson then won that election. Debs was thrown in jail during World War I for opposing American involvement in World War I. But it's interesting that in those days prior to World War I, the Socialist Party was a strong and growing party in the United States. And now, of course, one of the great epithets you hurl at an American politician is to call him a socialist. But at one point, it was very respectable and very popular.
Jono in the West Village on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. My question is about William Jennings Bryan, who I understand is the most famous or the most prolific also ran. He's a man, I confess, I don't know much about his politics. I just know the quote from the play Inherit the Wind, where he was one of the prosecutors, that a man gets crushed if he's constantly lifted to the heights of being an almost president but never succeeds. He was the great orator who was meant to be the great intellect, but I guess his policies never came to pass. Could you talk about him?
Jono, thank you. And clearly you write about William Jennings Bryan in your book. You write about Henry Clay in your book. Take us back to those eras.
William Jennings Bryan, one of the really fascinating men in American politics, and the caller, I appreciate especially being able to quote Inherit the Wind, is terrific. But actually, William Jennings Bryan, almost all of his policies eventually became law, and that's what I think is one of his great legacies, why he's so interesting, and why Inherit the Wind, I think, was a bit of a hatchet job. Really, the authors of that play, Inherit the Wind, that became the movie with Spencer Tracy, was They said, you know, we really weren't writing about the Scopes trial, which was the famous trial about whether you could teach evolution in the schools. We were actually doing an allegory on the McCarthyism, but in the process of writing that, they created this caricature of Brian as sort of this guy who's such a fundamentalist Christian. He almost comes across as ignorant and narrow-minded and bigoted. And really, that wasn't William Jennings Bryan at all. He was a remarkably progressive politician. Remember, in the 19th century, the Democratic Party was the conservative party. That was, the Democrats were the ones who believed in small government and laissez-faire government. And William Jennings Bryan changed that in one election, the election of 1896, which in many ways may have been the most exciting presidential election in American history. He began to advocate populist and progressive reforms that neither party had talked about before, the right of women to vote, child labor laws, creating a national income tax, a Federal Reserve, regulation of railroads, all these things that seemed incredibly radical at the time, mobilized Wall Street and the industrial giants of America against Bryan. They defeated him in a very close election. He lost to William McKinley. But, of course, over the next 20, 25 years, and then especially when Franklin Roosevelt headed up the New Deal, almost everything that Bryan advocated, including Social Security, became law. So he was an enormously influential man in absolutely completely transforming the Democratic Party from the conservative party to the progressive party, and very misunderstood. His opposition to evolution, real quickly, was not based so much on his opposition to science. He was very worried about how evolution was being applied to social science. He worried that it was giving people cause to ignore the poor because we had this idea of Spencer's thing that survival of the fittest. And he thought that was a terrible thing. He was probably until the civil rights movement, the last great activist who used religious principles to promote progressive reforms.
William Jennings Bryan was a nominee 3 times. So in an earlier era was Henry Clay, almost president 3 times, 1824, 1832, 1844. And you say that he's the greatest example of how failing to become president obscures a candidate's place in history. He was even eulogized by the New York Times as too great to be president.
That's right. I think, you know, we fetishize the presidency these days. We think the president is almost elect sort of a little emperor or a king. And we forget that at one point in history, and hopefully someday that may come back again, where the legislative branch also produces really great statesmen and stateswomen who influenced the country as much as a president does. And Clay certainly did that. He was probably the greatest legislator in American history, the man who really created the modern speakership. Before Clay, the Speaker of the House was kind of a ceremonial position. He made it the second most powerful job in the country. He was one of the great senators, famous for his debates with people like Daniel Webster and John C. Calhoun, forged 3 compromises in the legislature to avoid civil war when it seemed that was imminent. But he was a brilliant man, one of the men I came across. I thought really America really missed a bet. It's a shame he didn't win.
We just have about a minute left. Sure. We're going to have to skip over a lot of people who we could be talking about, certainly including Al Gore, who's still around. He may even be coming on the show in the next week to talk about his new book, but trying to have an impact on climate change as a media owner. You don't have a chapter about Hillary Clinton, as she never got the nomination, but you do mention her in the book. So just very briefly, why do you go there?
I mentioned Secretary Clinton primarily because, as you said, there are a lot of people who are wondering why you don't pick some of their favorites who never got the nomination. But obviously she broke through the she talked at the glass ceiling for women. She obviously portends that we're going to get a woman president someday. So she was a very influential person in American politics. And it's a shame sometimes we have so many good candidates running a single election and only one gets to be the nominee. But she certainly created quite a stir when she ran in 2008.
And Henry Clay 3 times, William Jennings Bryan 3 times, all those 2-time losers, Adlai Stevenson, et cetera. Now it seems like it's one and done. If you lose as a nominee, you don't get a second nomination.
That seems to have been the trend, and I don't know, you know, it's part of it. We've become increasingly competitive as an American society, increasingly focused on success. We don't see the virtues of losing. Maybe television has a part of that. People now have images of failure. You think about poor Mike Dukakis and that tank.
And we have to leave it there.
Okay.
Very interesting book. Really fun to talk about on President's Day. It's called Almost President, The Men Who Lost the Race But Changed the Nation. Our guest has been the author, Scott Faris.